Hi, everybody. This is Pam coming to you from the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which you can find as a free download on iTunes. And as always, I have the pleasure of having another amazing woman joining me today. So I want to say hey to Catherine. Hi, how's it going?
Hi, how are you? How are ye who?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm really excited to be getting to know a little bit more about you and hearing some more of your story.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited to be on here, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yeah, it's my pleasure, and I'm sure this is going to be a great conversation. So to get started, can you formally introduce yourself and where you're from and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Catherine Preston, and I'm from England, but I'm currently living in Chicago, and I've been here in the States for the past 2 years. And what I'm doing is I'm actually writing a book on stuttering. So I've been traveling around the country. I traveled for about a year, and then I moved here to Chicago last September, and I'm writing the book, and I actually just wrote the last chapter of the book last week. So all very exciting.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's got to feel like such a major accomplishment.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy with the place that the book's at right now. Now I just have to try and find myself an agent and a publisher, and that whole thing has to happen. But yeah, I'm really glad to have all the entries that I have in there, and I'm really glad to kind of see the first draft of it.
Yeah. So obviously you're a woman who stutters. So the book is not just about your stuttering and your own journey. It's about other people as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is introduced by the day that I start to stutter, and the first sort of two chapters are purely about the experiences that I'm going through as I grow up and, you know, just learning to handle this strange thing that's happening to me. And then I begin to do the interviews. I do two interviews in England. And then I decide that I really want to write this book, and that the subject is so much bigger than I am, and that I want to get to grips with what stuttering is and what it means to me and what it means to lots of other people. And the idea was to try to debunk so many of the misconceptions that I still think people have about stuttering. And so the book, you know, I'm in the book. It's done in a first person narrative style, but the body of the book is the interviews that I did. I mean, I did over 110 of them. Obviously not all of them are in the book, which is really sad for me, because there were, you know, all of them were so interesting, and you just can't have them all in there. So the book's really about the stories of people's lives and how they cope, and just the different perspectives that people have.
How did you find people to interview? I mean, just randomly, or did you do some research, or yeah?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a little bit of everything. I when I first arrived, I really didn't know what the hell I was doing, because I'd never written a book. I mean, I'd trained as a journalist and I'd had my degree in history, but that wasn't really any preparation at all for writing an entire book. Mm-hmm. So, I arrived and I began to sort of look up things on the internet, and I came up with people who had written books about stuttering and people that were doing research, and obviously lots of speech therapists. And then I found things like the NSA and the Stuttering Foundation. And the more people I interviewed, the more they kind of led me on, and they would introduce me to more people, and the thing just, it just took on this huge, fantastic momentum of its own, where I just, it, I mean, it got to a point where I had to start saying no to people, because there were just so many interesting people, and I tried to sort of interview as many different people as I was able to, as sort of as broad a spectrum as of people as I could.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just women or men. It's like a combination of both, and different ages and backgrounds and stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. I really wanted to create a broad brushstroke of what stuttering was all about, and I felt like the only way that I could do that was try and talk to people that were different ages and from totally different backgrounds, and people who were at totally different stages with their stutter. Like, lots of the people I met through the NSA were at a point of acceptance, or they'd been through the therapy and they had control over their speech, but there were also people who had never spoken to anyone about their speech before, and were really uncomfortable with it, and really felt like it had held them back. And I felt like it was important to have a little bit of everything in there. And then also, I just, in terms of interest for people, as well as having people that were completely unknown, I wanted to also throw in people who were famous, either actors or actresses or people that were famous in the sporting world.
Wow. That's just like so fascinating. So you were able to talk to well-known people as well as just ordinary people that we've never heard of, both just as easily?
I don't know if either of them was all that easy. I mean, sometimes things were. Sometimes things were, they just seemed to happen. And it was amazing how sometimes people would just kind of come into my path. For instance, I hadn't ever heard of, this is a terrible thing to say, but I hadn't ever heard of the CEO of General Electric, or the former CEO of General Electric, Jack Welch,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, which lots of people have heard of him, and lots of people would probably be quite aggravated with me that I hadn't. But anyway, I read somewhere that he was in business and he started. So I got in touch with his secretary and I just asked her if, you know, if he'd be interested in an interview. And I think because I didn't have any qualms about who he was, I probably came over as unbelievably confident.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so the interview with him was actually very easy to set up. And I had a lot of help from the Stuttering Foundation of America and the American Institute for Stuttering and the NSA. And they really, and our time, and they really introduced me to people like Bill Withers and Emily Blunt and Bob Love, and just these amazing people who I didn't ever think I would have access to.
Wow. Yeah. I'm of course a little bit more interested in the ordinary people. Well, absolutely. Because that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast for women, because it does seem like the people who stutter that we hear about are the well-known people, and sometimes they don't even really stutter that much.
Yeah.
So I just have found it really appealing to try to give, you know, ordinary, non-famous people who stutter the opportunity to tell their story. So, I'm sorry, Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think often their stories are the ones that are also more interesting or more raw because they haven't told it lots of times.
Yeah. And plus, like the average person living an ordinary life, I think sometimes can relate more to another, you know, average Joe just living an ordinary life behind the scenes. And, you know, because most of us are not going to aspire or going to become a Jack Welch.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're all going to be leading successful lives in one way or the other. And yeah, you're right. Sometimes it's these stories that are, you know, actually more appealing because they're as you said, raw and authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about some of the people that are not famous that you found, and how did you find some of them?
Yeah, well, oh goodness, well there were hundreds of them. One that really sticks out for me was, I was just blown away by him, because he hadn't ever spoken to anyone else about his stutter, and I mean the way that I had access to him was completely random in some ways, but it was one of those random instances that seems to make up my whole life right now, where essentially this was, I'd been doing interviews for about 4 months, and I decided that I'd really been very much on the East Coast, and I'd come to Chicago, but I hadn't really gone west, and I really hadn't seen that much of the country, and I wanted to see more, and I wanted to talk to a greater variety of people. So I decided to take a road trip, and we bought a car in Texas, and then the trip I did was with someone who's now my boyfriend.
Oh, cool.
And he also stutters, but that's a whole nother story. So we bought this car in Texas, and then we drove the car, and I guess we'd been on the road for about 3 weeks, and we ended up in New Mexico. We were in Taos, New Mexico, and we were doing this thing called couch surfing, where you stay at complete strangers' houses for free, which is kind of interesting, and you meet all sorts of interesting people. And we were having supper with the family that we were staying with one night, and the wife, it was a husband and wife and their three kids, and the wife turned around to me and she said, you know, this is the first time we've ever hosted anyone, and the reason that I agreed was when I heard you stutter on the phone, because I'm a speech therapist. And it was this huge kind of wow moment of, you know, this is unbelievable, and just feeling extremely lucky to be sitting there with her having this conversation. And she turned around and she said to us, you know, there's this client that I've just begun to see, and he's never spoken to anyone about a speech before, and I just think it would be so interesting for him to talk to you. She wasn't really thinking about the book. She was more thinking about just him having someone to talk to.
Someone else that stutters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because he, you know, he's lived a very rural life, and he just hadn't ever had the chance to really meet anyone else. So I drove to his house one evening, and we sat down, and it kind of went from being this slightly awkward conversation to being this incredible opening up, where he was so honest, and And at the end of it, his, or towards the end of it, his wife came in and she joined us, and they began to have a conversation. And then his daughter came in, who he hadn't ever talked to about it, and she began to ask questions. And at the end of it, when he took me out to my car, he said, you know, thank you so much. This is the first time I've ever talked about this with my wife.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and you know, one of those times when you really feel like, you really feel like you've got to know someone, and you've, in some little way, you've sort of brought up something out of them, and it's been in a really positive way.
Oh my God, that just like gave me goosebumps as I was listening to you tell that, because that likely was like a really profound moment in his life, and.
It was a really profound moment, actually, in my life also.
Well, why? Why? What do you mean?
Well, I suppose because I had been at that place. I'd been at that place of not talking to people. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly, you know, seeing him opening up was like, you know, you just see how helpful it is to talk to other people and to have a community of people who understand you.
Yeah, yeah. Now... Well, let's go back to you a little bit, since we really haven't gone there yet. So how did you grow up stuttering? I mean, did you try to hide it? Did you try to not bring attention to your stuttering?
Yeah, I definitely tried to hide it. I would say that I was unbelievably unsuccessful at hiding it, but I definitely tried. To start from the beginning, I began to stutter when I was 7 years old.
Oh, so a little bit later than most children that start to stutter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Lots of people I've met seem to have stuttered from the age that they began to talk. And so I guess that growing up, I always thought that the way that I began was the way everyone began, but it's probably not. And so, yeah, I began to stutter when I was about seven. And the shock of suddenly not being able to talk and suddenly finding myself very anxious about talking and sort of humiliated by the sound of my own voice became a very difficult thing to handle, and I had a really wonderful family and great friends, and I think that definitely helps, but it doesn't take away from the, you know, the real difficulty of coming to terms with that in yourself. And the way I think I dealt with it, probably until the age of about 21, was pretending that it didn't exist. Wow. Not talking about it to anyone, just, you know, talking. If someone brought it up to me, it wasn't that I would try and hide it, but never actively talking about it, and really being angry at my parents whenever they would bring it up, feeling like it was very much a deficiency in myself, and not seeking out other people who stuttered at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't have therapy as a child?
I actually did. I did have therapy. I had my first therapy my parents took me to when I was about 8. So I'd probably been stuttering for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was a great therapy group. It was an intensive course. I only hear good things about them these days. For me, I just was not at the right place. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the right place to kind of embrace the idea of changing myself. I was very much in a place of hiding it, and to have someone tell me that I stuttered, it seemed like they were telling me I had a disease, if you know what I mean. And I really didn't want to be associated with it. And so I think when I was on the intensive, it was about 2 weeks, and I sort of went through the motions of it when I was there. But afterwards, I didn't use the techniques that they taught me. Maybe I tried for a bit and then I didn't. I just I didn't want that in my life. But I did. I went through therapy. I had a couple, and I think what would kind of happen over the course of my life was that my mum would say to me, you know, you seem to be having a tough time with your speech, and maybe we should try something new. And so we would, and it wouldn't work, or I wouldn't be happy with it. But I did go to a great speech therapy group when I was, I went for the first time when I was, goodness me, I think I was 16. And it was great. The woman who ran it was this very empowering woman. And I met people that really began to change the way that I thought about stutterers, because I had a very negative image of them in my head. And at the age of 16, it was great. I really enjoyed it when I was there on the course. It was only a 3-day course. And then I went back to school, and suddenly the techniques that I had learned on the course seemed strange, and people were looking at me in a strange way. And I didn't have the self-confidence to embrace, you know, a new way of talking. And I just found it so hard to keep up the tools or anything. So that kind of lapsed away. And then I went back on the same course when I was, however old I was, I think I was 25. So a lot, you know, many years afterwards. And that was actually what changed my whole life. I mean, in lots of ways, it inspired me, because I met these people and it didn't really change the way I stuttered that much, but it changed the way that I thought about the world. And I wanted to really hear more people's stories, because I met some amazing people on the course and lots of people who had had a hard life because of the way people reacted to them. And it really made me want to write this book and really change the way that people saw stutterers.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds like you kind of came full circle, maybe, with your own attitudes and feelings about it, about stuttering, finally, and that you were ready to embrace it yourself and try to paint a more positive picture of the stuttering journey?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that took a long time. I think that, yeah, I mean, I can't say that I embrace it every day, even right now. But you know, even when I moved over here, I 2 years ago, I was still grappling with a lot of stuff that I hadn't accepted about myself. And now I feel like I'm at a place where the acceptance is more real to me. It's not just what I'm telling people. It's what I actually feel.
Yeah. So what was socializing and dating like for you?
Yikes. What was it like? Well, socializing was always okay. I mean, I had a great group of friends who were always very supportive of me, and I think I really leant on them for a lot. But dating was interesting. And as a woman who stutters, I think you have to, well, you know, for anyone who stutters, you have to sort of learn to be okay with the fact that when you meet someone and maybe you're interested in someone, you are putting out your biggest vulnerability to them as soon as you meet them. Which is not what people normally do by any means. Right. You know, people are normally quite cool when they first meet someone, and not that you can't be cool and stutter, but they're a little bit guarded about showing their feelings too much or whatever. And I think that stuttering and dating for me was always interesting, because I felt like my stutter definitely, I don't feel this way anymore because I'm in a good place with my life and in a relationship that makes me very happy. But I felt like the stuttering made me unattractive, and it was something I had to compensate for, if that makes any sense.
It does. So how did you do that? How did you compensate for the stuttering?
Yeah, I think I would really try and be funny, or try and be self-deprecating, or make myself attractive. I kind of really felt like I had to make myself more attractive, and that I think I felt I had to work harder than everyone else, which probably wasn't true at all. And I do remember, actually, I do remember I once met a guy at a bar, and yeah, it sounds like the beginning of a terrible story, but it w won't be, I promise. Anyway, I met this guy, and he asked me my name, and I said my name, and as I always do, I stuttered, telling him my name, and he began to laugh at me. And it's that experience that you worry is gonna happen, and then when it happens, you're almost surprised that it's happening. But I remember at the time being very, very angry at him, and sort of telling him off, and telling him, you can't act like that, and I stutter, and it's not a joke. I'm not. This isn't a funny way that I introduce myself to everyone. This is my life, and I remember that he felt, or he acted like he felt terrible, and that this actually turned into a whole evening of him following me wherever I went, and to telling me, I'm so sorry, I can't believe I acted like that. And so, in a weird way, the stutter was what attracted him to me in an extremely sort of strange way.
Yeah, wow. That's actually a really interesting story, because I recently had a conversation with somebody that had asked me about, what has, dating and getting to know, people like, when you stutter, and just like you said it, when you put your most vulnerable thing right out there. And this person had kind of alluded to me that, do you think sometimes guys go for women who stutter because it gives the guys the opportunity to be all macho and like, I can fix this and I can take care of you? Did you kind of get that maybe from that guy?
Yeah, that's really, completely. I think that was what was going through his head, maybe. I mean, I think he genuinely felt bad, because I think that he had thought he was being sort of funny. And but yeah, I think there's definitely a attitude with guys that they want to protect. I think all, I think that's very much a male trait. And so stuttering, definitely brings that out in them. I mean, I know with the boyfriend I have right now, whenever I have a hard time with my speech, or when someone reacts to me in a bad way, he becomes incredibly protective. But
Now,
it's, yeah.
do you become protective of him when he likewise experiences something similar?
Yeah, I do. I do become very protective, but I sense that he doesn't want me
Oh.
to. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I think that for a guy, I mean, he would love for me to be very protective and supportive of him, but I feel like he would find it difficult if I stood up for him, for example, in public.
Yeah, because that's not what the woman's supposed to do.
Perhaps. That sounds horrible, doesn't it?
Yeah, but but I think that's kind of the reality of the social roles.
Yeah, it probably is. And to be honest, though, I think I wouldn't handle it very well if someone was nasty to me in public and he stood up for me, I think I'd be very touched that he had, but I'd also want to think that I was able to stand up for myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, something crazy just popped into my head. Like, I do you ever experience, like, when somebody has been really nasty or mean to you, and like you know try to, you know, put them in their place or whatever? Like, have you ever cursed at somebody and found that when you're really angry and you curse that you don't stutter?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Which is interesting, but you obviously can't spend your whole life shouting at everyone.
Right.
You know that you'll be completely fluent. But yeah, there is something, and I wonder if it's something to do with the adrenaline, or the fact that you're completely thinking about something else, so you're not thinking about your stuttering at all.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if somebody did a study on it, because I don't either. I mean, I very rarely, you know, quote unquote, go off on anybody. But, you know, I've noticed that, like, when I'm really angry or upset, you know, and I can have extremely fluent periods when I'm, like, you know, telling somebody off. And it is just kind of funny that that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's really interesting.
Yeah. But what about these days? I mean, are you in therapy now, or are you kind of in a good place with where you're at, and you're okay with things as they are?
I feel like it's always a roller coaster. There's always times when I feel great, and then there's times when I don't feel so good about it. But even that, I'm beginning to accept. I'm beginning to see that, you know, that's just the rhythm of things.
Right.
But I'm not in any therapy right now. What I find has really helped me recently is trying to use a lot of voluntary stuttering. And I don't really understand why it helps me so much. Mm-hmm. I wish that I did. But I feel like when I voluntarily stutter, I am taking control in some ways, and that I'm really embracing myself, and I'm really kind of taking charge of who I am, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does. And I think that is indeed the very premise of voluntary stuttering. I think that's why it works, because it gives us that sense of control that we feel that we lose when we're in a block, or when we're stuttering, and you know, I think the whole control factor is exactly what makes voluntary stuttering work.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then, yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me, because it's just, it's a really, and it almost, I don't know if this makes, if this is true for everyone else, but it almost turns stuttering in your speech into a game that you're able to play with it a little bit.
You're right. I never really thought of it like that. But that just brings to mind, I one of the things that I've been doing over the past couple of years, since I too came out of the covert closet, is I go around to, I work in a school, so I have the good fortune of being affiliated with many of the schools in my district, and I've gone into some of the schools, I've asked them, and they've been more than happy to have me. I've gone in and done presentations on tolerance and respect and bullying and teasing, using stuttering as the example. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I do, especially with elementary kids, is give them an opportunity to try on stuttering. So I get them to do voluntary stuttering so that they can feel what it feels like.
Wow.
No, it's very empowering.
So cool.
because in just like you said, they get to play with it. Like I encourage them to try, you know, repetitions. I encourage them to try, you know, prolongations. You know, and when they try it, and you know, I break them into pairs, and they have to, you know, well, they don't have to, but most of them do it. They'll voluntarily stutter on their names with a partner, and then we'll talk about how it feels. And you know, when you do that with people, especially children, they get it.
Yeah, exactly. Completely. Have you ever done one of those workshops and had someone who actually stutters?
Actually, yes. And well, when I went to this one school right in my home community, I'd actually been a little bit anxious about doing a workshop like that in my home community. I felt more comfortable doing it when like schools that they didn't know me all that well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I asked the school right across from where I live if they'd be interested in having me. And in the prep work that we did, the principal told me that there was three kids in the school that stuttered and that they may or may not have a hard time with this, and that I shouldn't, you know, purposely call on them or whatever. So I was, you know, I was kind of mindful of who they were. And one of the things that we did at the end was I did SLP friend had given me this idea, and I kind of elaborated on it. One of the things that I did was I had a stuttering contest at the end. And
I love it.
Asked the kids for volunteers, you know, who could do the longest stuttering, the craziest stuttering, the loudest. And everybody was like, ooh, 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 me. They all wanted to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including the three kids that stuttered.
Oh, wow.
Which was like, really, like when you talked about earlier, this profound moment, that was a huge moment for these kids who stutter and who had been, you know, picked on by their peers, to actually be vying to be picked to get to do it. So yeah. it was really cool. Yeah. And you know, I think that was just as powerful for them and for the, you know, the rest of the kids as it was for the kids that didn't stutter. And we actually talked about that at the end. We talked about, you know, the kids that really do stutter. Now you know that it's not nice to tease them, and it turned out to be just such a great conversation.
Yeah, God, that sounds unbelievable. And it's just, I mean, it's just so great when you see stuttering or people's image of it being turned around from something that is sort of ripe to be ridiculed into something that's actually kind of something they want to be doing.
Exactly. Like they were all
amazing.
Yeah. And you know, and it's funny because I wasn't giving out anything more than just, you know, a certificate. You know?
Yeah. They were like
beating each other up trying to be the one to get picked, you know?
I love it. Wow.
Yeah. So it definitely was a lot of fun, and it just exemplifies, you know, just being able to play around with it. It makes it more normal, and it, you know, de-awfulizes the whole experience, especially mm-hmm. for younger people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, are we allowed to know what the name of the book is?
Ooh, are you? I don't know.
Really?
You
don't know if we're allowed, or you don't know what the name of the book is yet?
Oh, well, I don't know what the name is yet. It's more what it is. I mean, I have a name that I'm kind of working with right now, but I'm not sure if it's going to work. I'm not sure if it's a good name. I'm still playing around mm-hmm. with it. So I might hold off, but I promise that I will let you know as soon as I come up with something that I'm really happy with.
No, you know what? And that's not a problem because when I do these episodes with women who stutter, I usually have no idea what the title of the episode is going to be until I play it back again for editing, and then I just find something that the woman has said that was like really profound or whatever.
Yeah, that's great.
The title, you know, it's
that's
just
great.
Like, yeah, because it's, I don't need to title it. Usually the title like finds me, and, you know, and that's probably what will happen when you decide on the title. You'll know it's right because it'll just feel right.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, also, even though I've never been through this whole process before, I sense that the amount of control that I will have will go down and down as I begin to talk to agents and publishers.
Oh yeah,
they have their own ideas about what, you know, everything. So
absolutely. Now I do have just one more quick question, and maybe this is one that you can't answer either. But, how the heck did you afford to travel all over the country to meet with people who stutter?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent question. Basically, I'd been working in finance in London, and I'd been in my job for, goodness me, however long it was, I guess almost 2 years. And so I've been able to really save up. And I had savings also from before that time. And when I gave up my job and when I decided to move out here, I made a commitment to myself that I would travel and I would meet as many people as I could, and that this would be essentially like doing a, you know, like a master's. This would be my education in stuttering. So I moved over here and I had savings. I had a little bit of money, but I was traveling and I was living at that time, and, you know, still to this day, extremely frugally. So I, for instance, I mean, when I was on a road trip for 6 weeks, we only spent on accommodation for the whole trip, we only spent $10.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I would camp out and I would stay at people's houses, and I would do this thing called couch surfing, where you stay at strangers' houses for free. And so, and also we bought a car in Texas, and then we sold that same car in San Francisco, and we actually made a profit of about $600 on that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So, I mean, all sorts of little things I was able to kind of help myself out. And then while I've been here in Chicago, and I've actually been writing it, because I was in one place, but I was really wanting to focus on the book and not do a job that would take me away from that, I just took a job as a waitress. And so I waitress 3 days a week, and that turns out to be enough to pay my rent and buy myself all sorts of food and travel and things like that. So,
wow, what a story. Did you ever read the book that is just opened as a movie recently, Eat, Pray, and Love?
I have actually read that, yeah, and I haven't seen the movie, but yeah, I read the book.
I've read the book too, and it just so resonated with me. I haven't seen the movie yet either, but it almost kind of sounds like that's what you did. Like, you just dropped your life as you knew it and just made a commitment to do this self and other discovery to find the meaning of stuttering. Wow.
Yeah, it seemed, I mean, when I think about it right now and I kind of look back at that decision, it seems completely crazy. And I'm obviously extremely happy that I did it, but at the time, it just felt right, and I've never regretted it. I mean, there were times, I mean, all of the, you know, all of the people that I was working in finance with, they now have lots of cash, but I don't know, that was never really what I was after in my life anyway, and this just felt like something I had to do with my life.
Wow. It, you know, just real quick, because we are, we're going to need to wind down, but it just kind of reminds me, I had been communicating with a couple of women that I'd met in the online stuttering community for about a year through Twitter and Facebook, and we started talking to each other on Skype and whatnot, and one woman, her name is Lisa, lives outside of London, and another person lives in Norway. So
oh, wow.
If we started talking, wouldn't it be a hoot if we actually all met sometime?
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, right, that's not going to happen. But you know what? We made it happen. I went to England in March of this year. And stayed at Lisa's house, who I'd never met before, except just online. And you're right. My friends were saying, are you crazy? You don't know if they're murderers or are going to try to sell you into a sex ring or something.
Oh, no.
But it felt right, and it was just wonderful to, first of all, I was the first person that Lisa had ever met who stuttered, because she stutters herself.
Wow.
So for me to get off the plane and for us to meet each other face to face, it was this surreal, incredible, scary, anxious, amazing moment. But, you know, just like you, I mean, I could not have done it if I had to pay for hotel and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So she has two children. She farmed them out for the week and had us, and the woman from Norway, she came too. And it was just like this little in international fest for a week. And
so cool.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to do that stuff to, like, live life, you know, and...
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of think that we spend so much of our time thinking with our head, and sometimes you just have to think with your heart. You just have to go with it.
Absolutely. And when you do that, sometimes you just have the experiences that you never would have dreamed of having unless you were indeed, you know, thinking with your heart,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just being open to whatever comes your way, and just, you know, wow, I think I just found the title for this episode.
There you go.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. Well, listen, Catherine, this has just been an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for sharing this story, and I'm sure I can't wait, and listeners can't wait for the book to come out.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and thank you for having me on here. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk, and I'm looking forward to talking to you much more in the future.
Oh, definitely. Me too. We definitely need to do that. So thanks again.
Thank you so much.
This has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.